Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, here to play some old-time radio for you this time. We're going to start off with an episode of Dragnet from 1952. This is called The Big Test, and that title doesn't give us much information, so we're certainly going to have to keep our ears peeled to find out what that's about, and that's coming up immediately after I tell you about Duffy's Tavern. That's right, the world-famous Duffy's Tavern. And Duffy is never to be heard, but only talked to on the telephone. And Archie the manager will be there with his guest, Boris Karloff. This is from 1951. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, king size, extra mild and soothing, brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A young man walks into your office and tells you that his best friend has been killed by unknown assailants. Your job? Investigate. Friends, the name Fatima has always stood for quality.
Fatimas are distinctive, with a truly different flavor and aroma.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Remember, in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Because of its quality, its extra mildness, its better flavor and aroma, Fatima continues to grow in favor among king-size cigarette smokers everywhere.
Switch to Fatima yourself today.
Ask your dealer for Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack. King-size Fatima. The difference is quality.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, August 9th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 7:58 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide. That you, Frank?
Yeah, morning, Joe.
Looks like it's going to be a scorcher today, doesn't it?
Yeah, nice and clear.
How'd the weekend go?
Lousy.
Why? What do you mean?
Oh, Faye and me had a ruckus Saturday night.
Was that so?
Yeah, it happens every time we have somebody over for dinner. Never fails.
Yeah.
And she gets to yakking it up with the company. We never eat till 10:30. It's a miserable time for dinner.
Yeah, it's pretty late at that.
Saturday night, we had the Johnsons over. Gonna play a little cards, have a little dinner. You know, relax.
Mm-hmm.
Wife fixed Swedish meatballs. They're on the stove. Everything's dandy. She gets to talking. We finally sit down to eat. It's 10:15. Meatballs are burned.
Yeah.
By that time, we're all so hungry, we lost our appetite. It was real embarrassing, Joe. We finally sat down. I figured let Faye know I was pretty sore. But I didn't want to come right out and tell her in front of the Johnsons, you know.
Yeah, I can understand.
So I picked up one of the meatballs that was burned. Said she'd invented something new. Everybody else used chlorophyll for their teeth, but we had built-in charcoal.
Yeah, what'd she say?
Nothing. She just looked. Hasn't said a word to me since. Sends the kids with messages for me. It's pretty miserable.
She'll probably be over when you get home tonight.
Pardon me.
Yes, sir?
It's the homicide department where you report a murder.
Yes, sir, that's right.
You the fellas I talked to about a murder?
Yes, sir. Come on in. Sit down. Take that chair over there.
Thought I'd never make it.
Are you all right?
Yeah, now that I'm here, it's all right.
Your face pretty badly cut there. Those bruises, scratches on your throat. You sure you're all right now?
Yeah, I'm all right. I never thought I'd get here. At times I was ready to quit, but then I'd think of Kevin, what they did to him, and I had to keep walking. I had to. For Kevin, I had to.
Well, everything's all right now. You can tell us about it.
I don't know where to start.
What's your name, young fella?
Bruce Hamilton.
All right, Bruce. I'm Joe Friday. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Well, we know that you must have been through a terrible ordeal, but you can tell us about it. It's all right.
What day is today?
It's Monday, the 9th.
Monday. Then it was Saturday night. Just 2 days. Seems like 10 years. We just finished dinner, sitting around the fire having coffee, trying to figure out whose turn it was to do the dishes. Then we heard them.
You heard them? Who's that?
Horsemen. Lots of them. They rode right into the camp. One of them yelled something, and they all stopped. Stood there looking at us. We didn't know what to do, who they were. We just stood there. Then this big guy, I guess he was the leader, said something to us in Spanish. We couldn't understand him.
All right, go ahead.
You see, Kevin and I go to school together. Summer vacation, we decided to go down to Mexico and do a little prospecting. That's the reason we were there.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, we just stood there and looked at him. Big guy said something else, and then they all laughed. And he got off his horse and came over to Kevin and me. He was a big man. When we tried to tell him that we didn't know what he was saying, he laughed and turned to the other men, and they laughed too. Big guy said something else to him, and they all got off their horses and started to go through our things. Kevin told him not to and started to walk over to him to stop him. The leader hit Kevin and knocked him down. The men laughed at him, and Kevin got up and ran toward one of them. Kevin started to hit him. I broke away from the one that was holding me and ran to help Kevin. The big guy grabbed me and hit me in the face, knocked me down, started to kick me. I heard a shot. When I looked where Kevin was, he was all doubled up, holding his stomach. He hollered at me to help him. Then the guy shot him again. He fell down, didn't move. They all laughed, thought it was a big joke. I got up, one of them shot at me. I started running. I ran as fast as I could. He kept shooting. Thought sure they'd hit me, and I kind of waited for it. Then I ran through some bushes, and I fell into this gully.
Mm-hmm.
When I hit the bottom, I just lay there and didn't move, almost afraid to breathe. Guess they thought they'd kill me.
I see. What happened then?
I waited until I couldn't hear them anymore, and then I crawled up out of the gully to see if they were gone. I wanted to help Kevin. I didn't see anybody, so I walked over to where he was. He was laying on his face. You got no idea how I felt when I turned him over.
Mm-hmm. All right, we understand. Go ahead.
I knew right away he was dead. It shot him in the stomach and in the chest. Shirt was all stained. There was nothing I could do for him. Nothing anybody could do. I looked at him for a long time. I guess I cried. It was terrible. Kevin was dead and there's nothing I could do for him.
I see. What'd you do then?
I buried Kevin. I looked for something to dig the grave with, but they'd taken everything, even the shovels, everything. I found a place under a tree and dug a grave with my hands. Then I went back and got Kevin. Laid him in the grave I dug and covered him up. Said a prayer for him. I did the best I could for him. Best I could.
All right, son, try to take it easy. Frank, let's get him some water. I'll take him down to the interrogation room, all right?
All right.
Bruce, maybe you'd like to go down the hall to another room. It's a little more quiet down there, huh?
Yeah. Sorry. Crying like a kid. I guess you think it's silly, but I can't help it.
It's all right, Bruce. We know how you feel. Nobody gets too old to cry. Go ahead. No, it's down this way.
Okay. So tired. I'm glad to get this over with.
Sure. All right, here we are. Go ahead, Bruce. Want to sit down?
Thanks.
Here's your glass of water, Bruce.
Thanks. Tastes good. Helps.
All right. Now, is there any more you want to tell us?
Well, there's a little more. There was nothing I could do. I looked around. They'd taken everything. Dishes, food, supplies, clothes. I went over to the mesquite bushes where we'd hidden our duffel bag. We kept all our money and papers in there. Wallets, identification, all our valuables. But they'd found that. It was gone. They hadn't left anything.
Well, they took everything. Didn't leave a thing, huh?
Not a thing.
What'd you do then?
Started to walk. We parked our car just off the highway. It was about 5 miles. When I got to where we'd park it, the car was gone. I didn't know what to do. What could I do?
All right.
I started to walk to Ensenada to tell the police. Then I began to think that the bandits had taken my wallet. I didn't have any identification, no way to prove who I was. Couldn't even speak the language. Got scared that they might not believe me.
Now, you walked all the way from Ensenada to the American border, is that it?
That's right. I walked all Saturday night, and Sunday morning I found an old adobe house, and I crawled through a window and slept. I don't know how long I was asleep, but it was dark when I woke up. I started to walk again. I walked all Sunday night, too. When I got to the border, I was afraid to go through the gate, so I went down by the riverbed and found a hole in the fence. I crawled through and went over the American side. When I got there, I felt better. Safe. I figured that I'd go up to the first policeman I saw and tell him what happened.
Did you notify the authorities down in San Diego?
No, I got to the police station, but I didn't go in. I didn't tell them.
Why not?
Like I said, I didn't have anywhere to prove who I was. I had no money. My wallet was gone. My clothes were all torn. Face was all cut. I thought it'd be better if I could get to Kevin's mother. If I could see her and talk to her, she'd know what to do. I hitched a ride. I wanted to go to San Francisco. Truck driver brought me this far. While we were driving, I thought more and more about what I'd say to Kevin's mother, how I'd tell her he was dead. Then I knew I couldn't do it. But I had to tell somebody. That's why I came to see you.
Now, Bruce, we're going to have to go back down to Mexico. You'll be able to show us where the body is, won't you?
Well, if I have to go, I guess I can. But I can tell you exactly where it was. I can give you a map, tell you right where he's buried.
Do you want to give us that information now?
Yeah. It was south of Ensenada, 40 miles down the new paved highway.
South of Ensenada, 40 miles. You sure it was 40 miles?
Yeah. While we were driving, Kevin and I kept trying to figure out how many kilometers to a mile. I kept watching the speedometer. It was just 40 miles when we turned off the paved highway onto a little dirt road.
40 miles?
Yeah. There's a clump of trees near there in the gully. You can't miss it.
I see. Can you give us the description of the car, the license number?
Well, I don't remember the license number, but the car was a 51 Ford sedan, dark blue. Car belonged to Kevin. I never paid any attention to the license.
Mm-hmm. That's K-E-V-I-N, Kevin, huh?
Yeah.
Now we can check that through DMV. What was Kevin's full name and address?
Kevin Allen Bradley. He lived at 6502 Washington Street, San Francisco. He lived with his mother, apartment on Nob Hill.
Mm-hmm. Would you give us a description of Kevin?
Well, he's about my size, generally. 5'10", 140 pounds, blue eyes. His hair's light, kind of blonde like mine, 22 years old. We looked a lot alike. Kids at school used to think we were brothers sometimes.
I see. Joe, we better get a communication to the Mexican authorities, fill them in on the whole thing.
Yeah.
Tell them we're coming down.
Yeah.
Contact San Francisco and let them handle that end of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Get a teletype off the DMV in Sacramento, get a license number on the car. And we better contact the San Diego PD and get a hold of Al Gate and fill him in on the thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll stay here with Bruce. You want to take care of that?
Uh-huh.
Now look, young fella, would you know these bandits again if you saw them?
I might not know some of them, but the big guy and the one that shot Kevin, I'll never forget them. The big guy was tall, heavy, over 6 feet, well over 200 pounds. I'll never forget him. That laugh when they killed Kevin. When he laughed, you could see he had two gold teeth right here in front. These here.
Two gold teeth, huh?
Yeah.
Now, how about the other man, Bruce? Did you get a good look at him?
He was a small man, dark like the leader. He wasn't wearing a hat, real thin face. His clothes were all dirty and his pants were torn around the bottoms. He was wearing those leather sandals, the open kind. His feet were filthy like he hadn't had a bath in a year.
You think you'd be able to identify any of the others?
Well, I don't know. Maybe if I saw him. I was scared and I don't mind admitting.
Mm. Joe?
Yeah, Frank.
I stopped by R&I before I went on with the other communications. Checked the name Kevin Allen Bradley through.
Yeah.
There's a teletype from San Francisco dated July 13th. It's a missing person report on Kevin. You want to read it?
What's it say? Regular missing report?
Well, it's described as male, white, American, 22 years, 5'10", 140 pounds, blonde, blue eyes, fair complexion. The time of disappearance was wearing a dark blue gabardine suit. Driving a dark blue 1951 Ford, license number 1Robert2951. Something else, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
He was known to be carrying a sum of money in excess of $1,500 when he disappeared.
$1,500, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
Not to Kevin. He was used to carrying that kind of money. You see, his folks were pretty rich. He always had all the money he wanted.
Oh, I see. Well, how about this missing report here, Bruce?
What do you mean?
Well, didn't Kevin's mother know that he was going to Mexico?
Well, no. You see, they'd had an argument about where he was going to spend his summer vacation. She wanted him to go to Canada, and he wanted to come down here. One afternoon, we just took off. Kevin went to the bank and got the money, and we just took off.
I see. He didn't tell his mother anything about it?
No, he thought that she'd try to stop him. Probably would have, too, if she'd known.
Oh, was the money among the things that were stolen from you?
Well, yeah. It was in Kevin's wallet in the duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it was kind of foolish to leave that much money just laying around, but we did. We didn't think that anything had happened like this. When I stop and think back over it, Kevin being dead, I don't know, I just get sick.
Now, you say you didn't have any money. How did you get along?
I didn't think much about food. The important thing was to tell somebody about Kevin's being killed. That's all I thought about, telling somebody.
Yeah, sure. Well, you must be pretty hungry then. You'd like something to eat now, would you?
Yeah, it might taste pretty good. Sandwich and some coffee. How about you guys? You gonna eat?
Frank, how about you?
Yeah, after I get communications off, I'll run across the street and pick up some sandwiches and coffee and bring them back here.
All right, fine.
What kind of sandwich you like, Bruce?
Oh, anything. Doesn't make any difference.
Joe?
Oh, ham's all right. White bread, a lot of mustard. You know.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Right.
Oh, say, Joe, I'm running kind of low on my allowance. I only got a buck and a half. You got a little change?
Yeah, sure, I'll...
Now, here, let me get this.
What's that?
Huh?
Did you say you had some money?
Well, I have got $10. $10 bill.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you said the bandits took all your money. Did I get it wrong?
Well, what I meant is I didn't think I had any money. I found this 10 in my pocket just before I walked in here.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Look, you can see it's all wadded up. Must have been in my pocket for a long time. Just a 10 all wadded up.
Yeah, it's all crumpled up there. You can hardly tell what it is, can you?
Yeah, that's right. But you can see it's a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's all wrinkled up. You can see how I missed it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, why don't you put everything in your pockets right here on the table, huh?
Why? What'll that show?
All right, come on, boy.
I haven't got anything in my pockets.
Well, you found the 10. Maybe you'll find something else.
All right, but I don't know what it's going to show. Pocket knife, handkerchief, comb. You got the 10 on the table there. That's all.
Maybe there's something in your coat pocket.
No, I don't carry anything in my coat pockets. Stretches them.
Well, you take a look anyway, huh?
I told you I don't use them. See? Nothing.
How about the inside pocket?
No. There's nothing there.
Let's have a look, huh?
I told you there's nothing there.
Then you won't mind if we have a look.
What's that you got there, Bruce?
That's my wallet. Guess they didn't take it after all. Gee, thanks for finding it. You know, I probably wouldn't have thought to look for it. I just figured that it was gone. Here, let me have it.
Let's see what's in it, huh?
Well, just some cards, personal stuff like that. Nothing you'd be interested in. I forgot all about it. I feel pretty silly. I didn't even know it was there.
Take a look, Joe.
Mm-hmm. You say this is your wallet, is that right, Bruce?
Yeah, it's mine. I told you it's mine. How about let me have it, huh?
There's quite a bit of money in here, Bruce.
Huh?
I don't know. Just a glance here looks to be about $1,000, doesn't it?
Well, just a minute. I think I can explain that.
Well, there's another thing here I don't think you can explain.
What's that?
The name in the wallet, Kevin Bradley.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
Friends, the name Fatima has always stood for quality. Fatimas are distinctive, with a truly different flavor and aroma. And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Yes, there's a good reason why Fatima continues to grow in favor among king-size cigarette smokers everywhere.
In Fatima, the difference is quality.
Quality of tobaccos, the finest Turkish and domestic varieties, extra mild and superbly blended to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy.
Quality, even to the appearance of the bright, sunny yellow pack. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor.
So next time, insist on Fatima quality. Look for the bright, sunny yellow pack. Smoke Fatima, the extra mild and soothing king-size cigarette, with the added protection of Fatima quality.
With the finding of Kevin Bradley's wallet, the case had taken a new turn. We continued to question Bruce Hamilton, but he insisted that he thought the wallet and the money had been taken by the bandits when they killed the Bradley boy. While I talked to him, Frank went down the hall and contacted the Mexican authorities and gave them the information.
He gave them the description of Kevin Bradley and of Bruce Hamilton. They told him that to the best of their knowledge, there were no bandits operating in the vicinity, but they would dispatch a search party to go over the area. They said they would keep us advised of any developments that might arise. Frank also contacted the San Francisco Police Department and gave them the information. They said they'd take care of that end of the investigation. 11:47 a.m. Frank came back to the interrogation room, and we continued to question the Hamilton boy.
Well, I've told you all I know. I don't know how the money got there. I was as surprised as you were. I don't understand it. You gotta believe me.
Yeah, well, you're making it pretty tough to believe, Bruce. It's kind of hard to buy the fact that over $1,000 in Kevin's wallet turns up in your pocket and you don't know how it got there.
But it's the truth. I don't know how I can convince you that it's the truth.
Well, there are a couple of other things that aren't clear here.
What? Tell me. I'm not lying. I've got nothing to hide. What's not right? Tell me.
Well, this business of not telling the authorities.
I told you. I was scared that they might not believe me. You can understand that, can't you?
Well, maybe up to a point.
I thought that if I could get to Kevin's mother, then she could take care of it. I didn't know what else to do. And when I got to L.A., I had a chance to think about it, and I couldn't go through with it. I couldn't tell his mother. I couldn't face her.
Bruce, when you described where we could find the body, you said it was about 40 miles down the paved highway, that right?
That's what I said.
Well, how long has it been since you've been to Mexico?
Well, I told you, I just came back from there. Don't you believe anything I've told you?
Well, Jill and I just finished an investigation down in Mexico. Investigation took us about 70 miles south of Ensenada. We found the highway paved for only about 5 miles south. You say 40 miles. How do you explain the difference?
Well, maybe I was wrong about the distance.
Well, you're pretty sure when you first told us about it.
Well, maybe I made a mistake.
There's something else, Bruce. It's a little hazy here.
I told you I want to help anything.
How far south of Ensenada did you say you were?
I said about 40 miles. Now I'm not sure.
But you are sure that it was south of Ensenada?
Well, yeah.
And Kevin was killed on a Saturday night?
That's right.
And you started for the States right away?
Well, that's what I said. I started walking as soon as I found the car was gone.
And you walked all the way to the border?
Well, that's right.
How'd you walk? What route did you take?
I told you I stayed off the road. I was afraid of the bandits coming back. I walked along the roadside and then through the hills. I got off the roadside whenever I saw anybody coming.
But you did walk all the way?
Yeah, that's right. All the way from Ensenada to the border.
And it took you how long?
Well, Saturday night and Sunday night. I got a ride in San Diego in the morning.
What time do you figure that you started for the border?
Maybe 11:30, midnight. I don't know for sure.
And you stopped at dawn?
Well, yeah, I stopped and slept. Then I woke up and I started to walk.
And you're asking us to believe that you walked over 100 miles in less than 14 hours. Is that right?
Yeah.
And through country like that?
What do you think, that I'm making the whole thing up? Look at my face, my back. Here, look. Does this look like my imagination?
You could have gotten these in a fight with Kevin. Maybe he didn't want you to take the money.
You keep talking about the money. I try to tell you I don't know how the money got in my pocket. I don't know anything about it. You think I killed Kevin, is that right?
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it?
But he was my best friend. I had no reason to kill him. He was my friend.
Now look, son, we better get this thing straight for you. You've opened up a can of beans here. You waltz in here and give us a cock and bull story about this killing. Parts of your story we can't buy. Why are you trying to sell it to us? You lied about the road. You lied about the money. The story about how you walk doesn't ring true. You want to know what I really think, Bruce? I think the whole thing's a lie, from start to finish, a lie. Now, let's come off it. Who killed Kevin Bradley?
I don't know. I don't know.
Now, get this straight, Bruce. Did you kill him?
Huh?
Did you kill Kevin Bradley? Is that the reason for this story?
No, I didn't.
Well, somebody did. Can you tell us who?
You're getting me all mixed up.
You're the one that's getting it mixed up, Bruce. We just want to know who killed Kevin Bradley.
We think maybe it was you.
Looks like it might have been.
No, it couldn't be. Leave me alone. I didn't do it.
Why couldn't you have done it? Looks like you did.
Because Kevin Bradley isn't dead.
What's that?
He was never killed. I'm Kevin Bradley.
The boy broke down completely and admitted that the whole thing was a hoax. He said he hadn't been in Mexico at all, but that he'd spent the past week in a downtown hotel working out the story that he planned to tell us. He admitted that the wounds were self-inflicted. He explained that he had scratched his own face and hit himself with a rock to produce the cuts and bruises. He went on to say that he had picked Mexico as the scene of the false killing because he thought the story would be more difficult to trace. Like many citizens, he was unaware of the close cooperation between American law enforcement agencies and the Mexican authorities. We asked him about the existence of a Bruce Hamilton, and he told us there was such a boy in his class at school. 12:50 p.m. The communication had come through from San Francisco, and the teletype said that Mrs. Bradley was en route to Los Angeles to aid in the investigation. When we told Kevin about this, he lapsed into silence and for another hour refused to say anything. 2:05 p.m.
All right, now look, boy, you've been sitting there for an hour and you haven't said a word. If there's something you want to say, we'll listen.
There's nothing to say. I tried. Tried to get away from her. All my life she's told me what to do. I tried to tell her, but I couldn't. Nobody would understand. You don't, you can't. Every time I tried to get away, she'd say something or do something, so I couldn't leave. I was trapped and I didn't know what to do. Then I thought I did know, and even that didn't work. I thought that if you told her I was dead, she'd forget me. Leave me alone. I can't even die right.
Kevin, you're here. I knew what they told me was wrong. I knew you were all right.
Hello, Mother.
What's happened to you, Kevin, darling? Your face, your clothes. Oh, my poor baby, how did this happen? Are you all right? Oh, your poor face all cut. What's happened, Kevin?
It's all right, Mother.
No, it's not all right. I don't know what happened or who did this awful thing, but I'll take care of it. Officer.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you know about this?
I beg your pardon?
What do you know about this? Did you do it? Did you hit this poor boy? Look at this poor face. Just look at it. It's terrible. That's what it is. It's terrible. I mean to find out just what happened here. I'll get to the bottom of this. No, don't you worry, Kevin, baby. Mother's here. She'll take care of you.
Mother, please.
Oh, it's all right, honey. Everything will be all right.
Mother, these officers had nothing to do with it.
Of course not, if you say so, Kevin, baby. Have you called the doctor about this? Have you gotten in touch with someone to take care of his face? Never mind. I'll take him to a doctor. I'll look after him. Poor baby. Mother will look after him.
Mother, please don't.
Now, Kevin, you know that Mother knows what's best. Mother will take care of it.
Stop it. Stop it. Shut up.
Kevin.
I'm sick of it. Tired of it. For 20 years, as long as I can remember, you've taken care of things. Did you ever think I might want to take care of a few things myself? Have you ever thought that I wasn't a kid anymore? I'm an adult. Like it says on the missing report, male, white, American, 22 years, an adult.
All right, take it easy, son.
No, I've tried to say this before, and I've never had the nerve. I've got it now, and I'm going to finish. I'm tired of having you make all the arrangements for me. I'm going to have dates with girls that I want to go out with, not the ones you pick for me. I'm going to get a job and make my own way. I'm going to buy a car, and if I smash it up and me along with it, it's my business. I'll never forgive you for what you've done. You spent 20 years making me an outsider, always on the fringe. I couldn't do the things I wanted to, only the things you wanted me to do, only the things you thought best. I'm sick of having you make the decisions for me. From here on in, I'm going to make them myself. I tried to kill Kevin Bradley for no reason. You killed him a long time ago. Take a good look at me, Mother. Take a good look and see what you've done. I hate the sight of you. I hate everything about you. Now leave me alone and go away.
All right, take it easy, boy.
It's all right, officer. I understand. Sometimes he gets like this. He doesn't mean it. I know him. All right, Kevin. I'm sure the officers are impressed. Dry your eyes and we'll go home. Do you hear me, Kevin? Stop this foolishness, I said. We're going home.
Yes, Mother, I hear you.
I'm sorry, officers. Embarrassing. I don't know why he does these things. He's always been pretty emotional.
Yes, ma'am.
There's nothing else. We better be going. I want to catch the early plane back to the city. A party planned for tomorrow night. A million things to do. You'll have to help, Kevin. Kevin, do you hear me?
Yes, Mother, I hear you.
Well, then say goodbye to the officers and let's go.
Goodbye, Mr. Friday. Mr. Smith. I'm sorry this all happened.
Yeah, so are we, son.
I tried, Sergeant. Just didn't work, but I did try.
Kevin, let's go. I don't want to miss that plane.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, Sergeant.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for giving my boy back to me.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On August 9th, the matter was taken before the city attorney for a decision. In a moment, the results of that decision.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, if you're planning a trip this coming holiday weekend, I'd like to suggest that you take Fatima's along with you. Get a carton or two, and that way you'll have enough to last the trip. In Fatima, the difference is quality. Quality that gives you extra mildness and a really different flavor and aroma. You get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. That's king-size Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack and carton.
In the interest of justice, there was no complaint filed against Kevin Allen Bradley. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Herb Ellis, Edwin Bruce, Sarah Selby. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
King Size Fatima has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Friday, hear the Mario Lanza Show on NBC.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet the eat. Archie the Manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. How's business? Nil. Huh? It's a Latin word. N-I-L means, naturally, it's lousy. Huh? That confirms what? You're gonna sell a tavern. But, Duffy, you can't. This place is an institution. Yeah, a landmark. For years, people have said, meet me in front of Duffy's Tavern, and we'll go someplace for dinner. Huh? It's too late. The real estate guy is already on his way down. But Duffy, if you sell the place, where can I go? I can... Oh, yeah? Hey, Fats.
Yes, sir.
Fats, I feel sick. A real estate guy is on his way down here, and Duffy's selling a tavern.
You mean we liberated?
Liberated? You don't seem to realize, Fats. Duffy's selling the tavern. A thing like that could force us back to work.
Maybe the new owner will give us a job here.
Ah, but it wouldn't be the same, Fats. A new owner might turn it into one of them fancy cocktail lounges with a lot of modern production methods. Imagine me, Archie, a master bartender, turned into an end man on a martini line. Duffy's Tavern being sold. Mother Tavern. A refuge from the workaday world. I can't quite conceive it. We're sure gonna miss the laughs around here, Fats.
Yep. A lot of laughs.
Yeah. Remember when Duffy gave you your first paycheck?
Yep. A lot of laughs.
And a lot of tragedy, too. Remember the time we had the big trail arm fire next door when Chinley's laundry burned into the ground and a fireman made a mistake and came in here instead? Remember how them firemen loved the tavern, Fats? They just didn't want to leave.
No, sir. They just sat there sipping their beers and complaining about the heat.
Yes, sir, I can't bear the thought of leaving this joint. I wonder how we could discourage this real estate guy from buying it when he gets here.
Why don't you take him in and show him the kitchen?
Yeah, think that might do it?
When he hears them little feet tramping around, he ain't gonna think it's the march of time.
Just a second, Fats. A lot of fine people have vet the food in that kitchen. Deems Taylor, Lawrence Melchior.
Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
Boris Karloff.
Oh. Hey, wait a minute. Boris Karloff, that gives me an idea. Boris is a friend of mine. Maybe I could get him to come down here and make this real estate guy think the place is haunted.
Haunted? What self-respecting ghost would live here?
Look, don't be funny. Give me that phone till I call Karloff. Hello? Hotel Plaza? Plaza? Boris Karloff, please. Yes, room number 13. Hello, Boris. This is Archie. Archie from Duffy's Tavern. Remember? Neck, 15 and a half, blood type O. Look, Boris, I want you to come down to the tavern right away. You're too busy. But, Boris, I have a very grave problem. You'll be right down, huh? Okay, thanks again. Ah, gee, it's nice of Boris to do this for me. I guess the guy really loves me, huh?
Well, most of his friends are bats.
Hello, Art.
Oh, hi, Finnegan. Finnegan, did you ever see Boris Karloff in pictures?
Oh, yeah, I like him. He's very good. Yeah. So natural. At least to my way of thinking. I saw him in a picture the other night, a double feature. And his picture was much better than the other one.
Was, huh? What was the name of the other one?
The other one was called, Pate something or other.
Tell me, how did you like it?
Well, it was hard to follow the plot.
The plot?
Yeah. It started with a rooster crowing. And then all of a sudden, our hero comes out, and then the first thing he does is win the Irish sweepstakes. Then in the next scene, he's up in San Francisco signing a peace treaty.
This is the hero?
Yeah, but you wouldn't know him. He's dressed up in a silk hat disguised as a Jap.
That's nice. How did he like San Francisco?
Not much, George.
How do you know?
Well, in the next scene, him and his girlfriend is riding the surfboards in Florida.
Was he any good at this surfboard riding?
Oh, he sure was, George. And President Truman must have thought so, too, because in the next scene, the president gives the guy a medal.
This is still the same hero.
Oh, yeah, it's the same hero, only now he's in an army uniform. This is where the plot got confusing.
In what respect?
Well, in the next scene, the hero's girlfriend also gets a medal.
For what?
For winning a beauty contest in Atlantic City.
Well, was the hero in Atlantic City with her?
Oh, no. He was busy sitting on the roof.
What roof?
The roof of a house floating down the Mississippi River.
Finnegan, are you sure that you've seen this in the movies?
Yeah, why, what?
Sounds like one of them plots they write for television.
Oh, I never watch television.
You don't?
Nah. You never see nothing but newsreels.
And I knew that's a waste of time.
Mr. Archie.
Yes, what is it, Miss Duffy?
Papa asked me to give you this letter for your next employer.
Oh, a recommendation, huh? What does it say?
To whom it may concern.
What a clever way to start.
I want all the world to know about my faithful employee, Archie.
Well, that's nice.
It's Archie who has made me what I am today.
How nice.
Bankrupt.
Yeah. Well, Miss Duffy, it happens that I don't need his crummy letter. I got a certain Hollywood star coming down here tonight who's gonna make that letter unnecessary.
A Hollywood star? Who?
Yes.
Van Johnson.
No.
Clark Gable?
No.
Frank Sinatra? Gregory Peck? Tyrone Power?
No, but you're getting warmer.
You're telling me.
Well, I won't keep you guessing, Miss Duffy. It's Boris Karloff. He's coming down here tonight to haunt the place so that real estate guy won't buy it.
Boris Karloff? Gee, my favorite monster. You think he'll go for me?
Well, why not? The guy's only inhuman.
Who knows? We might even get married.
You and Boris? Oh, no.
Why not? I could do worse.
I was thinking of Boris. Understand what's keeping Boris. It's dark enough for the guy to have left his hotel. I wonder if he could have stopped at the morgue.
Why would he stop at the morgue?
Oh, just to browse. I hope he gets here before the real estate guy does, or my best laid plans will gang McGee. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, Finnegan. Look, we got a conspiracy tonight in the tavern that you're liable to louse up, so it presents a problem.
Oh, what's the problem?
How could we get rid of you?
Yeah, that is a problem. Let's see now. Well, you could try insulting me.
Insulting you? Okay, yeah. Finnegan, you're a moron.
Thank you, what?
Well, let's try it again. Finnegan, if brains was chow mein, you couldn't get on the menu at Ruby Foo's.
Try me again, what?
Look, there's no use trying to insult you, Finnegan. You're getting to be as smart as me.
That does it, Arch. I bid you good day.
That's good. Now, Fats.
Yeah.
Fats, when Karloff gets here, let's be sure we treat him right now. Play a little mood music for him, huh?
What will I play?
Oh, I don't know. A Tisket a Casket. Pretty Ghoul is Like a Melody. You know, something to make him feel he's among mutual fiends. I mean, friends. Go ahead, Fats. Play something.
Sure.
When they see you out with me, I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose, when you pass by the flowers droop and sigh. I know the reason why your perfection, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose. I don't need sugar, you just have to touch my cup. You my sugar, it's mighty, mighty sweet when you stir it up. When I'm tasting your tasty lips, the honey fairly drips your confection, goodness knows.
Yeah. Atta boy, Fats. Hey, you must be a fried piper. Here comes Boris Karloff now.
You're expecting maybe the bride of Finkelstein?
You boss. You know, I was surprised when I heard you was in town. When did you get in?
Just yesterday. My old friend, Bela Lugosi, flew me in.
Oh. Bela Lugosi, huh? I didn't know Lugosi had a plane.
He hasn't.
Oh. Well, anyway, by the nuts, Boris.
Yes?
You're something that puzzles me, you know? How come a guy with a name like Boris speaks English like you do?
Something that puzzles me. How come a guy with a name like Archie speaks English like you do?
Well, you ask a ghoulish question, you get a ghoulish answer. Anyway, how's things, Boris? How does it feel to be in a business where you do nothing but knock people off?
That's a fantastic question from the manager of Duffy's Tavern.
Guess this is no guy to argue with. Better be friendly. Boris, would you care for a drink?
Why, thank you.
What do you have?
Do you serve zombies?
We serve anybody, sure. Anything you want, Boris. Name your poison.
Now, please, don't let's talk shop.
Okay, as I was saying, it's a great racket you're in, you know? I'd like to play in one of them horror pictures myself sometime.
Seems to me you made a picture called The Man with My Face.
Well, that just happened to turn out to be a horror picture. Tell me, do you find it easy, them parts that you play?
No, I find it very exhausting. Yeah. All that makeup, those heavy costumes. Why, in one picture, they had me weighed down with 40 pounds of lead. How would you like to walk around carrying 40 pounds of lead?
He's been rehearsing the part for years.
Quiet, Max. Well, drink up, Boris. Here's good luck. Mud in your eye.
There is? Oh, my, I must stop sleeping in cemeteries. Ruins my looks.
Say, Archie.
Yes?
Well, ain't you gonna introduce me?
Oh, sure. Boris, you have a flair for the hideous. This is Miss Duffy. Miss Duffy, this is Frankenstein.
Likewise, I'm sure.
You ain't kidding.
So you're Boris Karloff.
Yes, and you're Miss Duffy.
Yes.
Gee, you give me the shivers.
Tell me, Mr. Karloff, have you ever played a romantic part in a picture?
Of course I have. Once I played the part of a lover, Miss Duffy. Didn't you see me in that scene in the haunted house? With the head of that beautiful girl nestling in my lap in the attic?
Yes. Why was the rest of her nestling in the basement?
Because Boris likes to concentrate on one thing at a time.
Mr. Karloff, I have a rather delicate question to ask you, and I don't quite know how to put it.
Well, perhaps you can give me a hint.
Yes, will you marry me?
Oh, Miss Duffy, you'd be taking an awful chance. Have you ever seen me with my makeup on?
Have you ever seen her with her makeup off? Now, Miss Duffy, please, your broomstick, it went that away. See you later. Terrible, huh, Boris?
Well, Archie, what was the favor you wanted to ask of me?
Oh, well, you see, there's a real estate guy coming down here to take over this joint, and we need something to scare him away.
Have you tried the free lunch?
No. No, we need something even obnoxiouser than that, Boris. We need you. I want you to make them believe, you see, that the joint is haunted. You know, blood-curdling screams, crunching of bones, clanking of chains, groans from the grave, fiendish tales of torture.
I know, I know. Just like the children's programs on television.
That's right. What do you say? Will you do it?
Sure, why not?
Attaboy, Boris, you got the right spirit.
What's that?
I say you got the right spirit.
Whose?
Look, Boris, will you or will you not haunt the place?
Well, if I do, I'll have to have the proper setting.
How do you mean?
Well, I want the tavern practically in darkness, with just faint streaks of light filtering through grimy windows. I want the eerie whistle of the wind rushing through crevices in the moldy wall. Rats and mice scurrying from corner to corner, and overhead, huge bats flapping their leathery wings as they swoop down past the cobwebs from rafter to rafter. That's what I'll need.
That's what you'll need?
Yes.
Take a look around you. That's what you already got.
Hey, Fats, I'm just thinking, how could we get our doors to squeak, you know, like them creaking doors on the radio?
Easy. Just oil them up a little.
We'll do that. We want to get this real estate guy scared to death.
Well, don't count too much on it.
What do you mean?
Anybody thinking of buying this place, don't scare easy.
We shall see. Look, Boris.
Yes?
Are you sure you can do a good job scaring this real estate guy?
Can I do a good job? Me, a man who was known to millions as an arch killer. Say, that gives me an idea. Come here, arch.
Now, just a second. Boris, take it easy. According to Emily Post, one does not make a ghost of one's host.
Mr. Arch. Mr. Archie.
Huh?
A customer just came in.
A customer came in?
You see, strange things are happening already.
Wait a minute, Boris. That ain't no customer. Quick, hide in the back room. Well, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Do you mind if I examine the premises here?
Oh, I take it that you are the late real estate man?
I beg your pardon?
Your name, sir?
Oh, Crow is the name.
Crow, huh?
Yes, sir. S. Crow.
S. Crow, huh? Tell me, Mr. Crow, what real estate firm do you represent?
Here's my card.
Let me see. Closure, 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 and closure. Foreclosures?
We specialize in them. Uh-huh. But I have no time to waste. Now, let's begin with the appraisal. Now, first, how is the roof?
The roof? Oh, it's perfect. If it didn't rain now and then, you'd never know it leaked.
And how's the cellar?
The cellar? The building inspector went down there just last week.
And what was his report?
I don't know. He ain't come up yet. Anything else you want to know?
What about termites?
All you want.
Do you mind if I sweep away some of the sawdust and look at the floor?
Mr. Crow, that sawdust is the floor. And look, before you go trying to buy this building, don't forget I personally have been here for 10 years and I got certain squatters' rights.
So what?
I intend to squat on them. Don't forget, possession is 9 points of the law.
What's that got to do with it?
You think 9 is an easy point to make? If you do, leave me quote your Clause B, Subdivision 1 of the Louisiana Purchase. I quote, whenever an imaginary tavern becomes a realty, then the ownership of the mortgage reverts to the quitclaim and or tenancy.
Is that all?
No. Unquote.
Just a second, young man. Are you trying to confuse me?
No, Crow. I'm trying to give you a tip. Lay off this place.
Lay off? Why?
Why? Because it's haunted. Every night at midnight, at the stroke of 12, a ghost comes out of that back room. Wait, here he comes now.
But it is not midnight.
Daylight saving time confuses him. Wait, look at him coming through the plaster there. Balmy Boris, the Daffy Demon of Duffy's. Oh, Boris, this is Mr. Crow.
Good evening, Mr. Crow. Here, let me take your hat and throat.
What a fiend.
Mortal Archie, where are your manners? We have a guest. Please remove your head.
Sorry, Boris. Look, now tell the gentleman how you became a ghost.
Huh? 200 years ago, I was foully murdered in this very tavern, which was known in those days as Ye Old Duffy's Inn, at the sign of the Rook and the Schnook.
Just a second. He's 200 years old?
Why, certainly. The reason he's so healthy is he only eats vegetarians. That is for dinner.
And what about breakfast?
Post-ghosties.
Now, do you think your client still wants to buy the place, Mr. Crow, with a ghost living in here 200 years?
Why not? I think my client would like to have a steady tenant.
This guy ain't scaring, Boris. You let me down. Now, please, put the heat on,
okay,
will you?
Okay, okay. Crow, I've been living down in the cellar with my friends, the spiders, the tarantulas, and the scorpions.
You didn't happen to run into a building inspector, did you?
Don't be such a wise guy, Crow. Boris, I think you're spending too much time in that cellar. It's beginning to make you look pale.
Exactly what the doctors tell me.
The doctors?
Yes, I have a doctor come in daily to give me a special diet, to build a rich, red blood. A different doctor each day, of course.
Did you hear that, Crow?
Oh, I wasn't listening. I was making some notes.
Look, Boris, look at the guy. You ain't even goose-pimpling him.
Mr. Crow, if your client should become the next owner of this building, I will be forced to have his blood. I'll squeeze it out of him drop by drop.
Don't that frighten you, Crow, all this blood squeezing?
Don't be silly. I've worked with landlords for years.
Boris, I'll give you one more chance. Either you scared a guy or you go back to Milton Berle.
Oh, no. No, Archie, not that. I'll do anything you say. Okay, okay. Crow, your hour has come.
Boris, get that look out of your eye.
I want to hear the crunch of bones, the crack of skulls.
Boris!
The ghastly flowing of blood.
Look! It walks. It's not human. And yet in human form. Stop! Let me out of here!
Attaboy, Boris, that did it. I know I could count on you.
Wait a minute. Look, it walks. It's not human, and yet it's in human form. Stop! Get me out of here!
Hey, what's going on here?
Hold on.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.